Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
I hope everybody is staying comfortable on this very warm day. And I hope everybody is getting back to some sense of normalcy in their lives. And it is, that is a cause for optimism and some joy. Tonight, I'd like us to revisit a subject that we've talked about before, and that is that an important founding principles of the United States is what's known in the Constitution as the pursuit of happiness. A very interesting phrase that's embedded in this country and in many people's minds. And we have actually discussed this idea before within Canando. We have talked about it in order to understand how to understand this principle through the mind of practice. What does it mean, pursuit of happiness, if we look at it through the mind of our practice? And of course, we come to understand that happiness is something that really cannot be pursued. And we understand that point based on our own experience through our practice and also through the teachings. Happiness is not something that we can be pursued. And why is that? Well, fundamentally, it is because happiness is not a commodity. Happiness is not something that we can possess. We cannot hold it in our hands. We cannot store it, put it in a safe place, put it up on a shelf. We cannot purchase happiness. It can't be constructed and it can't be acquired. But in our culture, in our society, these are common beliefs that people hold about happiness. And why is that? It is because we see the world as being totally comprised of material things. And that's a very familiar feeling. Interpreting the world as comprised solely of material things. And it, in a way, in our mind, it makes sense. We say, oh, that makes sense. Because almost all aspects of our everyday life is made up of physical things. What we do and how we get around and how we do our activities. It makes sense. The world is full of material things, is our kind of an inherent belief we have. But when we see our everyday world through the mind of practice, we understand that we are seeing the world only in one dimension, the physical dimension. And we also come to understand in our gut that we need our mind to be engaged in the world at a level other than the physical, if we are to see and recognize the complete multi-dimension world that we occupy. So we come to understand that holding on to an attitude of pursuing this idea of happiness is really the basis for unhappiness, because that narrow approach to happiness misses the truth. If we see our world as a single dimension entity where happiness is its main point, we miss the truth. Because the whole notion of pursuit is really seeing the world as being made up of toys. We come to mistakenly understand the world as it is something to be played with, just the same way children play at a playground. So if we pursue happiness because we understand that it is something material and physical that we can possess, then life itself becomes a personal toy. And that, of course, is a big misunderstanding of what our life is. We know that the interest in Zen practice started about 60 or 70 years ago here in the United States. And in those very early days, at first, its meaning and its significance was not fully understood. Zen practice was embraced and pursued by, you know, people we call hippies and intellectuals and academic people and philosophers. Zen practice in those early days was something very exciting to talk about and to write about. It was also seen as a way to get something. So early American Zen was seen as a pursuit of enlightenment or fame or recognition, you know, something you could talk about at parties. It was also seen as a recognition, as a way to publish books. So the true meaning of the practice and its seriousness was not really recognized. In those early days of Zen in this country, this practice wasn't really seen as a practice. It was seen as a toy, as if it were simply an attractive work of art that we were importing from Japan or China. So 60 to 70 years ago, Zen was mistakenly seen as an art form, something to possess. Much like having a statue of the Buddha in your garden, or having a calligraphy from China or Japan hanging on the wall of your home or your apartment. But as people got serious about the practice in more recent years, it started to be recognized as something very profound. Practice was seen as a larger way of understanding and living our life. We came to see that our practice had the power to clarify life's meaning for us and to put an end to confusion about what we were doing with our life. So over the years, over the past half century or more, an increasing number of people have become interested in Zen practice. But to fully understand the practice and to engage in it authentically, we really need to know, it's important to know, what is practice at its core? What is practice at its core? You know, it's not enough just to follow instructions about Zen practice. Not enough to mechanically do what your Zazen instructor tells you to do, or to mindlessly do what your teacher says. That's not enough. And it's also not enough to think, oh, I've started Zen practice and I know what I'm doing. Or to say, to announce to the world, to tell your friends, I do Zen practice. If we see the practice that way, if we say to ourselves or to say to others, I am a Zen person, that's a way of posing as something or someone special. It is trying to create an image of ourselves. It's playing with the practice as if it were a toy. You know, young children, very young children, are really in love with comic book heroes. They dress up as comic book heroes. And that is not a bad thing. Because imitating the comic book heroes that they see, it provides them with a model of behavior that they admire. Comic book heroes present a portrait of courage, selflessness, dedicated to fighting injustice, and to being very adult in their life. So if children pay attention to comic book heroes and even like to dress up as their heroes, this can help them understand the ideal qualities of living an adult life. But of course, when we become adults, it's not such a good thing. To become a mature person means to grow out of pretending to be a comic book hero. Grow out, get away from fantasizing and posing. In other words, to be mature means to put aside our toys and to integrate those admirable qualities of those comic book heroes into our own personal life. When we first start to practice, it does feel like we are pursuing something. Maybe we are pursuing enlightenment. Maybe we are pursuing understanding, peace of mind, what we all desperately want. Maybe we are pursuing an increased mental power. And at first, it's very natural to have this misunderstanding. But at some point, it becomes very important to understand that Zen practice is not a pursuit. What we understand is that Zen practice is a way of taking care of ourselves in a very large way. which includes being kind and generous to ourselves, so that we can have a relaxed and confident and warm sense about our life. So what we are practicing, what we are learning to do through our practice is to take care. To take care. And taking care, the taking care attitude is the very best gift that we can give to ourselves. And this extends to our everyday life and to others. So I think everyone here tonight knows the story of Buddha, knows the legend of Buddha. He is said to have been the son of a king. He was very privileged. He was very intelligent. He was very handsome, you know, a pleasure to look at. He was talented, he was wealthy, and he had a very beautiful family. But despite all of that, as the legend tells us, he felt that the palace life was limited and it was constricting. It was constricting his life because it was made up of very petty tasks and petty amusements. And he found no pleasure in his luxury and in the affluence that surrounded him. So the Buddha, as a young man, was very discontented. He yearned for freedom, a certain kind of freedom. He yearned for a larger life. And he understood that life, his life was not a toy. That life was not a toy. So he did something quite radical. He snuck out of the palace at night with his attendant because he wanted to see the world outside the palace. He wanted to see the everyday world of ordinary people. And as the story tells us, he encountered, he came in contact with various forms of suffering. He saw for the first time sickness. He saw how so many people were sick and that there was no cure for sickness, you know, more than 2,000 years ago. If you got seriously ill, there was no cure. He saw old age and he understood that it was relentless. There was no turning back. In old age, there was no turning back to a younger time. And he saw death. He saw the sorrow that was a result of death. He saw the fear of death. And that when death visited someone or a family, there was no going back. There was one other thing that the young Buddha, or the young man, the young prince who was to become Buddha, he saw a monk in a yellow robe. I'm not sure what religion or spiritual practice the monk represented, but he did see a monk in a yellow robe, an individual who had very few possessions, but who exhibited calm and joy, was continually smiling, and was untroubled. And the young Buddha-to-be wanted to be like that. He wanted to have the big freedom from suffering. And he was willing to give up his privileges. You know, it's one thing to give up wealth. That's pretty easy. We can adjust to a life that's not as comfortable as the one we've had, but it's very difficult to give up privileges, to give up a sense of entitlement that we have been living. That was a very big act, to give up the privileges of royalty, the privileges of comfort and of being in charge, of being able to do what we want whenever we want. Buddha gave up privileges. So he left his comfortable home and went on a pilgrimage. He went seeking for understanding and a way out of suffering. And that, leaving home and going on a solitary pilgrimage, was not unusual in his day. That life, that lifestyle was recognized as a very valid and noble option for young people in those earlier times. We all yearn for happiness. We all want to be satisfied and content with our life, whatever that may mean for each of us. Sometimes we feel that material things will make us happy. Sometimes we feel that emotional things will make us happy. And this youth who was to become the Buddha, he had both the material things and the emotional things. But still, he was not content. He was troubled by something that was missing, something very intangible, something beyond personal possession, something that his thinking mind could not reach. So he set out to seek the intangible. He set out to seek it through the practice of his day, which was leaving home. He left home. And after a number of years of difficulty and frustration, he eventually made a very profound discovery. There was no need to pursue it, whatever it was. There was no need to pursue it. He discovered that he and all creatures have it. He discovered that wisdom is always present. It is always here. It has always been here. We are always among it, in the midst of it. And we pursue it as wisdom, not aware that it is already here. And why is that? Why do we have to work so hard to uncover the wisdom that is already here? Why don't we recognize that we already have it? the answer comes to us through our practice. Eventually, we discover that the mind is much too busy pursuing it in order to see that it's right in front of us. So the foundation of our practice is to stop for a time all of our physical and our mental activities and let our mind be as still as a pond where there are no waves, where ripples do not hide what is going on. We all want to be free of suffering. And have a spiritual understanding of our life. But of course, these days are so different than 2,500 years ago or two millennia ago. We cannot be monks in monasteries, and we cannot live our lives as wanderers, like the monk that Buddha saw outside of his palace. These lifestyles are not a valid option today for the majority of us. In addition, we don't want to be separated from ordinary life and its difficulties. We don't want to be secluded. Very few of us see that as a valid option for us. But even though we cannot physically live the life of a monk, we can have a monk's mind. We can have a monk's attitude and a monk's practice. On our cushion and in our daily life. One of the things that we do in our practice, sometimes we have to say to ourselves, stop pursuing. You know, we have to be a little bit strict with ourselves. And we have to be strict with ourselves because our practice is not yet strong. When our practice is still immature and is in the process of growing, we do have to have a reminder. We have to be strict with ourselves. But actually, the point of this reminder to stop pursuing is not about criticizing ourselves or scolding ourselves, or being scolded by someone else. And it is not about rigidly keeping the Buddha's precepts in some kind of restricted way. So we say it. We tell ourselves, stop pursuing. It is a reminder that there is no need to pursue. We already have the most important things in our life. So pursuing something else and attaching to various things of our life is a misunderstanding. So we can end this confusion around the pursuit of happiness simply by mindfully taking care of what is fundamental in our life. And it starts with our posture, our physical posture. It starts with the attentive posture of our mind. And it continues in the relationships with everyone and everything. We have everything we need, and we are always with everything. So when we give up trying to gain things for ourselves, such as happiness, that is to say, if we stop being anxious about what we don't have, we will be very satisfied and happy to be here right now and to take care of ourselves and to take care of everything and everyone with a calm, gentle mind. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.